Chaplains are torchbearers, light bearers. We are like Promethean bringers of fire and the hands and the feet of all that is holy. That is our charge. Where other people see suffering and death and run away, we run toward the scene. As one supervisor told my unit, chaplains rush in where angels fear to tread. As a chaplain, I'm called to bear witness to the unfolding of life before me. And in that work, I try to use that Promethean firelight to illuminate the recesses of the heart and to help people find the light of spiritual healing. It's 2 a.m., and my pager is going off next to my pillow. I sit bolt upright, grab my cell phone, and call back the number displayed in the pager window. The call has come from the overnight charge nurse on the critical care unit at Good Samaritan Hospital. She is terse, and she tells me that a Muslim family is there. The father slash husband is in arrest for the second time, and that I am needed ASAP. I tell her that I'm on my way, dress quickly in the dark, and drive to the hospital. By the time I arrive, he has coded a third and a final time and is actively dying. Upon checking in with the charge nurse upon arrival, I find her rattled by something other than the death of a man on her unit. She explains to me that she doesn't understand this family's weird request, and she tells me to go handle them. Loud crying erupts from the man's room, signaling his passing. Upon checking in with the family, the daughter explains to me that they are Muslim and that there are things that need to be done right now for her deceased father, certain rituals that must be observed, and that the staff don't seem to understand her and her mother's request, such as removing tubes, bathing and shrouding the body, securing the lower jaw and feet, and other things. The nurse has never dealt with observant Muslims before and thinks the family is just being difficult. As the chaplain on duty, it is my job to know both these types of pastoral needs and to intercede for the family so that their loved ones and their religious ways are respected. So I secure scissors and fresh bed sheets, bathing supplies, and help negotiate the situation around the tubes with the nurse and the coroner, and make a call to the local Islamic center. This is, in part, what culturally competent pastoral care looks like in action, attending to the need, acting as cultural and religious translator, and being a non-judgmental, non-anxious presence. Being empowered to perform the rituals of their faith was spiritually healing to this family, as the wife whispered to me afterwards. They didn't think anyone really saw their suffering or cared about them as human beings with spiritual and emotional needs. I did not do very much that night. I just showed up and did what I could with what I had to work with in the moment, physically and spiritually. And that is how spiritual healing happens. We show up. We open ourselves up to the experience. We give and receive in the spirit of love and mutual vulnerability. With each call, each visit, each silent witness, we begin again in love. It is a profound experience to be in the presence of the dying, particularly during the process of the active dying in passing act. Perhaps the thing I have most noticed, though, is the focus on life and not death during the dying process. This runs contrary to what many people think when I tell them that I'm volunteering with hospice, visiting patients, and sitting vigil with the dying. Being present and companioning and witnessing the patient along with their beloveds, I find that while we of course talk about the death and the dying process, itself and the physical and the psychological changes to come. Our focus is generally on celebrating the patient's life as it has come to pass and the life they're living right now in this moment. We lift that up. Life is truly in the details and in the senses. The silky feel of the fur on a golden retriever's head as the patient lovingly pets the therapy dog. Hearing a grandchild sing an old cherished hymn and harmonizing with her. Teaching a roommate how to crochet. Or just going outside and feeling the sun on her face. Grieving and sadness are never far away and are intermingled with such experiences, but that is the key point. They are part of a larger appreciation of life unfolding in the moment, life as a process of becoming. In my hospice experience, there's a deep appreciation of natality in myriad forms, of life as non-linear but cyclical. I have seen this sense of natality in macro and micro ways, from bearing witness to the rebirth of a patient's spirituality, to the simple, joyful celebration of seeing a sunrise during a vigil. Reflecting on natality and the experience of life as a process of becoming, I'm reminded here of Joyce Rupp's story of the butterflies. Nature's winged heralds of transformation, a natural story of entering the dark place, the chrysalis, the womb, dying to one form of life and emerging newly born in another. The grand old tree also illustrates this cycle and the fact that the life cycle never truly stops. It simply takes on new forms and new purposes. And here then is where we find hope. In this complex journey, that the essence of life is ever present. The divine spark, the light that shines in the darkness, from John 1:5, is never truly overcome. Henry Wyman, a UU theologian, says religious faith is basically an act. The act of giving oneself into the keeping of what commands faith, to be transformed by it and to serve it above all. To me, as a UU pagan, what commands faith is being present to life in the world, no matter what kind it is. In visiting a patient, one gives their whole self to the person you're visiting, in the sense of being completely present to them, and unwitnessing their life as it unfolds. For their life, like yours, like mine, is always unfolding. It's journeying ever onward, even as their body itself is also unfolding in its own way, preparing to return to the earth as we all eventually will. Becoming aware of my own mortality is invigorating indeed, as I am called into the awareness of the passing of each moment, and my soul is gently turned toward witnessing the beauty inherent in the world all around me. Even the beauty inherent in the fragile skeletal leaves still clinging to some of the trees in my backyard, and the rich compost of oak and maple and hickory leaves continuing to transform just beyond my fence. Just as the leaves are continuing their transformational journey in the yard, so am I continuing my transformational journey of faith and personal growth as I witness and serve. My hospice volunteer director has said of this type of volunteering, "We ask you to fall in love with the person, watch them die, and then do it all over again with someone new." While this is an accurate description of the basic process of the work we do, I think I'd like to amend it and would instead say, we ask you to fall in love with a person, witness and love them through life and death, and then do it all over again with someone new. I think the focus on the active process of loving and witnessing is much more accurate than a passive process of watching, because there is active transformation occurring, both in the patient and in the volunteer. If we are truly present and spiritually open, we too receive the blessing of transformation as we learn to live and love in more complex and fulfilling ways. We can spiritually heal even if our bodies must return to the earth. Whether our spirit is truly eternal or not, it really doesn't matter, because we are at least capable of healing before we leave this earthly plane. And this is something that's not a mystery or a supposition to me. It is truth, as I have borne witness to the process. I've seen healing come in the form of a dying woman's spiritual rebirth into her first faith, and I've seen healing in an old patriarch giving and receiving forgiveness on his deathbed. The important lesson of my work as a chaplain and as a minister is that it's less important to think about what happens when we die and more important to consider what happens when we stop living. On my rounds, I'm constantly reminded of the many ways we humans make meaning in life and death. We will all return to the earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. But our journey resonates long after we are gone from this place, like the tree did in the grand old tree. In one of my hospice training classes on non-responsive patients, we were reminded of the power of presence and the deep value of holding each other in love and simply bearing witness to each other's struggles and pain. My supervisor, Amy, asked a volunteer, Linda, to describe her visit with a patient at a nursing home facility as an illustration of the experience of caring for non-responsive patients in general. For this visit, Linda sat with the patient, announced her presence, and then held the patient's hand in both of her own for about half an hour in silent communion. Though the tableau may have looked simple to a casual outside observer, just two women holding hands, looking in the door at the women in the room, there was an important exchange of love and care going on. It takes the right kind of eyes to see it, the eyes that see beyond the surface of things, to see the beauty of the experience, and the right kind of heart, too, one that senses nuances, to feel the depth of sharing occurring in the connection of flesh to flesh and soul to soul. Amy, the observer, described watching Linda and the patient, who is a woman with ALS, holding hands and being present to each other. ALS patients are fully cognizant of their experiences. Their senses and their mind continue to function as before, but their muscles and nerves, but not the sensory neurons, are progressively shutting down, an action that will eventually culminate in death. When Linda started to withdraw her hand to leave, her patient squeezed her hand very gently with her remaining strength, letting Linda know in no uncertain terms that she was aware of her presence and was grateful for her visit. To me, this story is spiritually uplifting, a keen reminder that we can always build loving community with each other, right where we are, in the moment, no matter what our circumstances are, and that it's never too late to learn to give and receive love. So many people were nurtured and even healed by this experience of Linda and her patient. The patient, Linda, Amy, me, my fellow students, perhaps some of you hearing this story. There is surely a poignancy and a sadness, of course, in realizing that our time on earth grows shorter and shorter with each passing moment. But there is great joy in realizing that every moment is a new moment, and that there is a possibility for spiritual nourishment in every interaction we have with our fellow humans, with nature, with our own spirit. I think we sometimes forget about the power of presence, of holding each other in love, literally, metaphorically, spiritually. It's a free gift, and it's uniquely ours to give, one living being to another. And yet it seems that in our human busyness and our dependence on technology to connect us, that we forget the power of corporeal presence in the moment. In hospice, our presence is our most precious gift to give. And we both give and receive this gift with our patients. It's always an exchange. From you I receive, to you I give, as the hymn goes. The present moment is all we have. And if we attend to it carefully, with open hearts, we can be transformed by it. There is always hope. There is always hope for healing. As ever, in each moment, we begin again in love. Amen. Ashe. Blessed be. Let's sing together now. Number 402, From You I Receive. Can we sing it together, please, three times through? I invite you to join hands as you are comfortable for our benediction and closing blessing. Today's benediction is from Enid Virago. Go in peace. Hold in your heart the certainty that the spirit of life is with you always. When your heart is torn asunder and when you soar with sweet joy, you are never alone. Never apart from the spirit that resides within us, that guides our life and cherishes us always. Take comfort. Blessed be and amen. Gentle people, go in peace. Let us sing our closing blessing.